It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
So Peter Navarro in the Navarro Report says, and I quote, "If these election irregularities are not fully investigated prior to Inauguration Day and thereby effectively allowed to stand, this nation runs the very real risk of never being able to have a fair presidential election again." That was in the Navarro Report, which you probably have heard something about. That is quite a statement, in fact, that he puts out there. But, you know, it wasn't far removed from a lot of other voices I've had in my ears telling me that this is liberty's last stand or that we are in a heap of trouble here. And at first, initially, you can try and brush some of that off and think, probably not really. But then you begin to see more and more telltale signs and you really begin to start to question things. And I think you all out there know what I'm speaking of. And is this freedom's last stand? Yeah, lots to talk about today, my fellow Americans. Welcome to Viewpoint Presents. This is Malcolm along with Michael Johns. So in that report says the last thing this country needs is an inauguration day where we have what is perceived to be an illegal and illegitimate president of the United States. Michael, we've been doing everything we can to make that difference so that that doesn't happen. That there is an inauguration that shouldn't be. So are people really listening or do they really understand the gravity of it?
Hello, Malcolm, back for episode 21. I don't know if I have a saying for that. There's sweet 16, 21. We're of drinking age now, I guess. That would be the thing to say about it.
There you go, buddy. I like it.
Might need one with the topics we're covering today in a country that is, as we've described it, you know, it's not rhetoric at the crossroads. And maybe we're even down one of those roads a little bit and need to back up. I think, Peter Navarro is a great American and a great expert on the economy. And in an administration for 4 years that sometimes has been filled with people who've been not loyal to this president or his agenda, Peter Navarro has been incredibly committed, incredibly. He's provided extraordinary counsel to this president. He's been right on the issues. And he has been kind of the centerpiece of an administration that for the first time in our lifetimes has confronted China the way it really is. And he spoke the truth about the pandemic, provided the president with great counsel on that. And now at this defining moment, as we look at a 2020 presidential election, which I want to reiterate, remains the outcome of which remains very much in dispute, despite the fact that we've blown through the safe harbor date. Despite the fact that we blew through the safe harbor date, despite the fact that we've had electors appointed, we also have alternate electors appointed, and soon we'll have Congress weighing in on the electors. And of course, Inauguration Day, January 20, as I'm telling everyone, there is no statute of limitations that I'm aware of constitutionally that would allow a president who unfairly won this election or won it through fraud to remain in office.
January 6th is the next big date, Congress meets, right? Joint sessions of Congress come together here. Listen, one thing about Navarro, as you just stated, he is the director of the White House Office for Trade and Manufacturing Policy. Right. But did you know this? By the way, he dubbed this report the Immaculate Deception and quite fascinating. But here's the thing. He did this as a private citizen, Michael.
I was thinking that as soon as I saw it, I go, there's no way. There's a thing called a Hatch Act,
exactly,
which prohibits political work in a governmental capacity. So you would have to have a range.
But it's interesting it just shows you, though. I just think it's kind of fascinating. Here he is in that position. And all this effort gets put into the Navarro report. And as you say, he's a private citizen because of the Hatch Act. And there you are.
Well, and let's face it, you know, he's not, you know, it's a sign, not to go down another road, but it's a sign of really how few people the president's been able to turn to on issues of critical importance. Because he's not, you know, ideally you would have, you know, White House counsel office maybe look at this, or, yeah, I'm not hearing much out of them at all. And he, of course, you know, he's a former business professor at Harvard, he's an MBA, I think he's a PhD guy. He's a highly educated and an undeniable expert.
Fascinating.
Whose views, when they were aligned with the Democrat Party, were described as being, mm-hmm. you know, insightful, brilliant, yeah. creative, pro-American. And then once he aligned himself with Trump, of course, they're fringe extremist. Out of the mainstream.
Isn't you know, that the case? I'd love to interview Navarro. I have to tell you, I find him a fascinating man. Let me tell you this now.
I'll see if I can make that happen for you.
I would appreciate that. Can you have it done by Monday, please?
All right.
President Trump tweeted on this, Michael, on Saturday. And let me read this to you. And we need to talk about this. He says, Peter Navarro releases 36-page report alleging election fraud more than sufficient to swing victory to Trump. He puts a link in there to it. A great report by Peter, statistically impossible to have lost the 2020 election. And then he says, big protest in DC on January 6th, be there, will be wild, with an exclamation mark as always. So now I ask you here, there's a lot of, he says that January 6th encourages people to be there, big protest will be wild. It has a little bit of an edge to it with a lot of other things I'm getting in my other ear that people are telling me. And there's a lot of talk that about the security of the vote, that it really is about our national security. And clearly, I don't think any of us would argue that it's not. It is. But there are many saying that there are possibilities, and I'm not speculating on this. I'm just putting it out there to you that martial law could potentially be triggered, especially in the swing states specifically, as they try to take control of the equipment. You almost wonder why that wasn't done already or whatever. There's a lot of talk about that. Talk to me about what you see. Now, let's just stay on this a moment here to the end conclusion between now and January 6th. Will be wild protest. Calls for national security, martial law, military, seizing the equipment in the swing states and taking a revote. Do you believe the president has he has the right to do this?
He has immense authority that he hasn't exercised. And I think it's much like the whole Mueller thing, where he feels that the facts are on his side and that the more extreme measures available to him don't and shouldn't be exercised because he's hopeful, and I think we're all hopeful, that these facts can be established probably in state legislatures, which really hold.
That's the key to it right there, the state legislatures.
I mean, this really is is an important corrective step to make, I think, even for those educated on and who are following this process.
Yeah.
The courts are interesting. They do have some jurisdiction, but their only jurisdiction really is to go back and advise the state legislatures in event of a positive ruling in Trump's support to reallocate the electors in Trump's favor. So the state legislatures can do that themselves based on their own investigations. So if they're looking into this and they have votes that are thrown out, or they determine that voting election equipment was unreliable or manipulated, or they have votes that were by individuals who were not residents of that state or that area, or were illegal immigrants, or were fraudulently submitted, and those are all issues that can be addressed. And let's be clear on that. We're talking about in this Navarro report. The way I would phrase it, because it becomes, we get lost sometimes when issues become too complicated for broad public consumption of an understanding.
Right.
You know, you can get somebody behind one theme, but if you try to get them behind something that has like six different, sort of subcomponents, it becomes complicated. So it's like, could you explain the election fraud in like in an elevator speech as they talk about? Probably not. It's a little longer conversation. And maybe it's consciously developed that way.
Yeah.
So there's really six different, think about it in these terms, six different tactics that were employed consistently in six different states.
Right.
Six different battleground states.
Yeah.
And now among those six battleground states, each one of those battleground states is controlled by a Republican state house and a Republican state Senate, largely elected as part of the Tea Party's movement's work over the last decade. And one state in Nevada that's controlled by a Democrat state legislature. So five of the six of these, I don't want to say they're predisposed to be favorable because that's, we don't have that on our side.
But there's some control in there.
They're inclined to be objective.
That's right.
So we're seeing some real acts of bravery out of Harrisburg, We're seeing some real acts of bravery out of Phoenix. So we're seeing some incredible work in Wisconsin might be the lowest hanging fruit, where a judge looked at this and said, you know what, if you can go, you know, find these illegal votes and present them as evidence, I will order basically the reallocation of the electors. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, now there's a lot of work that needs to be done up there. I hope that the resources are allocated, because I've often said, and I want to repeat this, because this is a message really, this is my message to the Trump legal team. No one in this country who cares about representative democracy or our Constitution wants to have to look back on this moment in history and say, you know, we had the facts on our side, we had a rigged election, and if we deployed more resources or worked more hard, we could have corrected it.
Absolutely.
Because the biggest risk, and this is Navarro's, I recall, this was his closing paragraph in his report. What he warns the American people is that you don't kind of get a pass on this election. You don't get to sort of say, look, we don't really like this Trump guy, so he's got to go. We're going to allow these fraudulent practices to exist, but we'll put them back in place in 2022 and 2024.
Right.
You let them slide now, they are going to become permanent fixtures of American electoral processes.
Yeah.
Absolutely cannot be done, which is why this requires urgency right now.
Yeah, well, listen, to the point where you talk about, to be clear, six dimensions across six battleground states. You know, over time, how many times have I said to you with this whole election, Michael, it's like they were taken out. What I've seen with all these different deficiencies happening, it was like one insurance policy after the next. I mean, they took every possible mode they could think about to taint this election and get Trump out of office. Now, the way Navarro sums it up in the report, I find quite fascinating. He says this was theft by 1,000 cuts across six dimensions and six battleground states. Now, I thought he summed it up beautifully, even more so. But I do see this, all these anomalies, and there are six different areas, and we can go through some of them here today. But it's everything from outright voter fraud to the Equal Protection Clause violations and everything in between, ballot mishandling and everything else. But I do think the way he summed it up, and I really give this report a lot of credibility and the fact that Navarro did it, with the fact, you know, if you want to put this in, like you say, an elevated speech is the perfect way to say it. Okay, so these are 1,000 cuts across six dimensions of six battleground states. So in other words, this was a very devious plan. It's what's happening here, and on multiple levels, many dimensions, to take down an administration. And you know, with all that said, none of this really surprises me, Michael. It should surprise me, but it doesn't surprise me because of everything that has transpired since Trump has been in office. I'm not surprised. Are you surprised by it?
No. I mean, I think let's just look back on, because now we have a track record of months now of commentary on what we were anticipating was happening. And I think you and I were bringing a lot of insight, knowledge.
We did.
And to this, our focus was on the mail-in ballots. We felt, and we were proven correct on this, that the mail-in ballot was vastly less reliable, more prone to fraud. That's indisputable, by the way. It was found by a bipartisan commission that Jimmy Carter co-chaired. It's been anecdotally the case time after time. It's the most unreliable, least secure, and most fraud-prone means of voting, period. So we recognize that component. But were we identifying, for instance, that we would have actual voting systems that were not secure, that were owned by foreign companies? I admit this was something that I wasn't personally focused on, but someone should have been, and clearly no one was. And even now, after all of the revelation of this information regarding foreign ownership of these systems, regarding whistleblower allegations, now in affidavits, and regarding a preliminary report of the assessment of these systems that found an error rate, a forensic error rate that was found to be over 60%. It's incredible to me that we're not building national momentum to have every one of these systems seized, which is my message right now. And that message itself is complicated because, like we kind of acknowledge, we have six different categories of fraud. Mm-hmm. All six of them are important. All six of them have varying levels of possible magnitude. All six of them were implemented to the detriment of Donald Trump's popular vote in these states.
Yeah, it sure was. And it did a lot of damage. You said something a couple of moments ago, and I really thought that was a key statement. And I love the way you phrased, okay, even with the Mueller report thing, he had immense powers. He could have done things that he didn't do back then. He was trying to show restraint, even though he knew that he was being attacked. Same thing here in this election. He just believes probably that fairness and the honorability of this election will show its face at some point. Is he showing good restraints at this point? Because I think he's being really quiet other than his Twitter feed. You're not hearing any more national addresses, any big conferences, anything going on. Are we waiting for the other shoe to drop, I'm wondering, with that and back to this whole thing?
Well, I feel that we have a strategy here that's being executed on. The problem is that we're not fully in control of the timing of all of it because there's both a workload, there's a discovery and research component, there's interviewing of witnesses and whistleblowers. Every whistleblower in turn, you know, has more information that leads to additional leads. And then, of course, you've got this court process, the scheduling of which you don't control, the outcome of which you don't control. So, you know, we talked about the Supreme Court dismissal of the Texas AG filing and the question of, does a Texas AG have standing to question electoral practices in other states? It's kind of, maybe a difficult question. I mean, I would sort of say yes, in the sense that the people of Texas are going to be impacted. You know, they might not have been where the alleged criminal fraud was implemented, though I think there was fraud in Texas, actually. But clearly they're having a precedent thrust upon them that the state didn't vote for because there were these alleged practices. But asking a court, I believe, to look even at evidence that is very strong puts them in a position, and particularly high courts, that they're not typically in, you know, like these allegations, these affidavits, all of which are immensely credible. And now there's almost 1,000 of them. Okay, so it's like, obviously there's some that are just unbelievably urgent, flagrant, could be clearly investigated. DOJ and FBI bringing no effort or energy to any of this.
Right, the courts.
Nothing. Yeah. So that, but what I'm saying is, in the absence of that, we're doing what we did in Michigan. So where you got to go find a citizen who has standing in that jurisdiction, who actually brought the case based on a marijuana legalization referendum issue, nothing related to the Trump campaign, about the Dominion system, gets a favorable authorization to have the Dominion system reviewed, hires experts, and of course you got to pay these experts. He probably turned to the Trump legal team. I suspect they paid for it, and they're questioning this guy. But you know, the finding was a 68.805% error rate, and when you have that, but just think about the evidence. Anecdotally, we take the first look at one of these systems that we've been concerned about, you know, thinking that it flipped thousands of votes. It is a 68.05% error rate when the federal standard is to have 0.0008. I mean, this system should be completely unplugged and never used again. But first, it has to be, all of these need to be examined nationally.
Well, listen, the courts are very hesitant. We obviously see now, Michael, the courts are very hesitant to step in on every level. I mean, on all the way up to the Supreme Court, clearly, they're very hesitant to step into this election business.
Well, because it's broad. It's broad. Sure. And the facts are going to be, you know, obviously we have affidavits and these are signed by individuals who face 5 years in jail if they're misrepresenting things. But obviously they're going to present their own testimony, tainted probably. Biased, probably, agenda-driven, probably, but you can see they're not cooperating. Mm-hmm. The broader political point is that can't the country just unite around the fact that allegations of voter fraud, whoever was the beneficiary or was damaged by that fraud, need to be taken very seriously? Because they're not being taken
seriously.
Well,
let me answer that for you. The answer is no, they don't. I disagree with you. They're not going to do that because
that way. There's two questions. Should they? And then are they? Should they?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what was the Washington Post motto that they put on the front of the paper during the Trump period? Because they were so fearful that somehow he was an autocrat, which I, for the life of me, don't understand. democracy dies in darkness, right? They made that the theme of one of the leading newspapers, mainstream media newspapers in the country. Democracy dies in darkness. Well, here now, after this Michigan finding of an extraordinary error rate, and a lot of technology experts, of which I am definitely not one, would tell you that when you have an error rate in software, it more commonly is duplicated in that software everywhere than isn't. All right. So as I understand software and these technologies, when you find a deficiency of that nature, there's very rarely is it a one-off aberration.
And what's remarkable, right, is that's the only one that's been investigated at this point, the forensic analysis. I mean,
So now, consistent with the theme both of Dominion and also consistent with what's going on in follow up on that, you get to Maricopa County, Arizona. Now, Arizona is, it's important to emphasize, is another state that, that the president purportedly lost very narrowly. All these states are really pretty narrow losses. But Maricopa County is the centerpiece of that state. I mean, a very sizable percentage of the entire state's population is either in or around Phoenix. The rest of the state is less populated, with the exception of maybe Tucson. So you get into the state Senate hearing testimony on these systems about the history of them, about the technology of them, about the allegations of fraud that are made both historically and in this election. And they conclude that this is obviously terrifying, right? This is a centerpiece of everything. Once you lose representative democracy, meaning any elected official can keep their office or lose their office based on somebody somewhere deciding what an algorithm is or how things are manipulated, the power no longer lies with the people.
And in Arizona, the subpoenas were issued for the machines, as you see, by the Arizona Senate Judiciary there. You see that, and the Senate President Karen Fan, and then you see the Board of Supervisors voted 4-1. They won't even give them up, the Dominion machines, for another forensic audit, which happened in Michigan, which is what I said. Michigan was the tip of the iceberg. If we could do these forensic audits with all the machines, why is that asking so much? You know, you and I reported.
All right, this is why I believe
a few months ago. Well,
yeah, and this is why I believe, Malcolm, that like many causes and crises that we're confronting, the American people are sitting out there. They look at the numbers. Half the country feels it was a fraudulent election. 80% of Republicans believe it was a fraudulent election. So if you're out there and you're suspecting fraud, but you don't quite know what to do about it or how to act, or you think you're alone, you are not alone. This country has serious doubts about it. Mm-hmm. And in my judgment, even if the people have not been afforded, and which is incredible because we've had this media blackout of it, right? Like, you know, I tweet something with, you know, documented data and information alleging fraud. You have a Twitter warning thrown on my tweet. Like, they know anything about any of this. They have no expertise in election law. They have no expertise in election processes. They haven't independently investigated any of these things. Well, and the media coverage is disgraceful.
All right.
It's disgraceful.
Yeah, but you're always trying to make sense out of the insensible. I mean, I don't know what you want.
Not always. But I've also cautioned you that we waste too much time trying to point out the outrageousness of this situation we're in, and it is outrageous. But my point is, here's the point. 50% of the country believes it was a fraudulent election. 80% of Republicans believe it was a fraudulent election. That's despite this media blackout. Imagine if we had objective media coverage where those numbers would be.
Understood. I mean, but the media, to your point even before that, I guess what I'm trying to say back to you, those people, this, you know, we use the words widespread fraud. He uses it very well, Navarro, in the report, the theft by 1,000 cuts across 6 dimensions. I love that. I absolutely love that, because it just tells you how screwed we are. And the fact that these are all the insurance policies they took out to make this happen. But here's the thing. When you say, well, why won't they? Or you and I questioned weeks ago, why won't they let all the machines go through a forensic audit? What's so hard to do? Why won't they check out the signatures? Why won't they want an honest and fair election? And the answer back to all of these things, truthfully, Michael, is Because the powers to be who created all this mess, there is no common sense with it. They don't want any answers. They created the mess. That's what they want, and they got what they want. And so we have that is the cipher through all this. That's where I was headed.
We're screwed, so we have this. We get this 4-1 vote, right? Yeah. After, you know, so you have an elected Senate that says, you know, which is
in Arizona, the people,
right? These aren't just random people. These aren't even partisan. You know, overtly partisan people.
We're not giving you the machines.
They're like they're charged with upholding the U.S. and state constitutions. That state constitution provides for free and fair elections. They get significant probable causes. Maybe that didn't happen in Maricopa County. They properly.
Why not prove it? Why not prove it? Why?
Let me just walk through it. So they properly, to their great credit, order this forensic audit of these systems to sort of either relieve the population of any concerns, right? Everything looks good. Don't calm down. There's no problem. Or, as was the case in Michigan, fire alarms. We got immense problems with these systems. So this is important information to obtain. What are these four people thinking they're protecting? And what are they afraid of? Because I can only think of one one plausible explanation that. Well, you're afraid of what's going to be uncovered.
So then you say, well, how big of a conspiracy does this go? How big of a plan? How many people were involved in this thing? Or then you pause and you step off the gas and you say, or is it just widespread hatred so much for the president that they want him out of there?
I used to use a phrase when some people would present plausible things as conspiracy. You know, sometimes it's not a conspiracy, it's a consensus. So, you know, there are outrageous things
in
our
country. This could be one of those things, could be a consensus.
Where you have a lot of people who fully understand basically what the game is here, and they may not have all been part of any grand planning scheme. They didn't have to, because our two-party system and, you know, half the country and a lot of these big city officials not liking Trump was enough motivating factor for them to cooperate with it.
It stretches the mind, but it appears to be the common denominator that comes up in all of these stories, because I don't see anything else. You know, when you and I talked a couple of weeks back when the election happened a few weeks ago, we talked about the enthusiasm gap between President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden the differences are in the stratosphere. There was no enthusiasm for Biden at all because he didn't warrant any. The guy was wearing a mask whenever he was in public, and he was other than that sheltered or never spoke to anybody, never asked questions. When you talk about media.
I've literally never seen a presidential candidate for whom there was less enthusiasm. And obviously that's a very subjective component of this. Let me make my point.
You can
understand how someone who's not diving in, who's not reading the 1,000 affidavits, who's not, as you and I are, interacting with the legal team or any of those things, can just sort of have a general walking around feeling that Trump's drawing these he's drawing these raucous stadium crowds that are packed and have overflow capacity. Yeah. And then this other guy who sort of like frailly walks in there to before 20 people look like they would rather or falling asleep, who has no real agenda that anyone can articulate that isn't just basically reigniting and bringing back flawed policy to the Obama era that nobody particularly liked in the first place. And this guy went out and got 80 million votes. And I think there's a lot of Americans, and it's a very subjective statement, who go, there's no way 80 million of my fellow Americans voted for this guy. This is no way.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's subjective at all. I don't know that it is. And as I say, all the conclusions, when you look at this entire race, you would have to be a freaking moron not to figure out something smells like a bad rat. Okay. I mean, it just does. Whatever you look at, it doesn't matter whatever level it is, whether it was pre-election, whether it was election, or whether it was post-election now. It all smells, Michael. And these people who were pushing for this consensus, as you called it, they obviously the conclusion I've come to is that they don't want the truth out there. Back to Jack Nicholson. You can't handle the truth because you don't want the blessed truth, man. They don't want it out there. So the consensus, and then you start to scratch your head and you say, well, what's the alternative for these people? Back to democracy dying in darkness. What are they really looking for? What's the end result of what they want with this election and the damage that Navarro points out in the report of the damage that's going to be done to this union? It's serious business. And yet, if that is consensus or whatever, I think we're in a heap of trouble, Michael. That's what I'm saying. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but anyway, I was getting to the point of what the American people can do, which is part of what we want to communicate. Right. So it's not just this is outrageous, you know, being outraged, disgusted, appalled, repelled, and despising the other side is not enough for an American citizen these days. You need to be constructively involved. And if you're looking to be constructively involved, and particularly if you're an Arizona resident, I think you got to get, you know, before this body and say, what do you mean you're not allowing a duly issued legal subpoena from an elected Senate to evaluate a voting system to confirm or unconfirm that voter fraud or voting irregularities occurred in a system for which there's probable cause to believe it may have happened? What is the explanation? Why are these people not being questioned? Yeah. And then I look at this coverage of the Navarro report. You know, Navarro had 500 journalists on that conference call when they released this on Friday. Right. And all of the coverage is unbelievably disparaging for a report that is immensely detailed, that has like almost 200 footnotes, that is well written, that is as far as I can tell, documentably true, and which pieces together a complicated story in a very good way, just like the Texas Attorney General did in his SCOTUS filing. Those are two really good documents to go read if you're looking to understand this.
And you say, why did it happen? And so why isn't anybody questioning it? What's your answer?
Well, I'm just saying, you just look at this coverage of the Navarro report.
Yeah.
And it's just off the walls. I mean, they can't seem to deal, as you say, with the facts or handle the facts. Mm-hmm. They attempt to debunk statements that aren't even made in it to sort of attribute to him. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I read the Forbes piece, and I just have to single them out for being just what a complete fall. That used to be an iconic journalistic entity owned by the great Steve Forbes and his father. And now it's basically China investment and owned. And you open that thing, it's not even a business magazine anymore. Yeah. It's like a propaganda outlet.
Well, it's one of two things I've concluded. And based on our talk right here, my friend, it's either a conspiracy or a consensus. It's either one or the other. That's what's happening here, which is why we keep coming to the denominator of why aren't they questioning this? Why aren't they inspecting the machines? Why is not the media reporting this? Why doesn't anybody want truth? It's either a conspiracy to commit a plan to take down the union, or it's a consensus that we've had enough of this guy getting the hell out of there. Right or wrong?
Yeah, that's spot on. I think you could not execute this strategy of fraud without some level of broad coordination. The only question is the magnitude of it. But I think once you fall down to the operational processes, I mean, so if you're working and you're a poll, let's say you're a poll worker in Maricopa County, and they introduce this system and it's spitting out or incorrectly registering votes, or failing, you know, where they're having human intervention in a lion's share of the cases, you know, you're limited. Like, what are you supposed to do about that? I mean, you didn't purchase the system. You probably wouldn't have purchased it if anyone had asked for your advice on it, which gets to this broader question that I think is really one of the forefront questions, is that every single public official, whether they're on an election board or that they're with a state secretary of state, needs to be put under oath as it relates to questions regarding the decision to acquire this system, because there is no way, based on what I know about it, that you would ever even put this in an area of consideration, particularly after the damning reports that were issued by the state of Texas multiple times about all the technical vulnerabilities and then all the anecdotal cases, including in the Philippines and elsewhere, about how it's been unreliable. And you know, all all of the components of that. And we're now in a situation where these Dominion executives up in, I guess, Toronto, Canada, are dodging questions. They've gone into hiding, basically, Their excuse for doing that is they believe there's threats in their life. I question that very much. It's an excuse for them not to really face tough questioning. So they were supposed to testify in Harrisburg. They don't show up. They did show up, I guess, in Michigan. But quite honestly, I don't really think the questions presented them were and they're not really being responsive in addressing the core substantive questions, you know? So if I were a Dominion executive right now, I wouldn't be sending like cease and desist letters to Sidney Powell. I would be contacting Sidney Powell and saying, I am really troubled to hear what you think of our systems. You know, we're really proud of them and all the things they're saying, you know, in their public talking points. And what can I do to cooperate and make these systems available and answer any and all questions you have about them?
Basically, they put up a document, which you and I talked about this past week here, which we're going to have out in the public here, the Dominion Voting, setting the record straight. So they put up a document, Don, that you remember that document, Michael.
Right.
They went and they...
Very misleading, in my view.
Well, it was highly misleading, the whole thing was. And they used a word scrabble to get the points across, a game of word scrabble. And they took the Antrim, Michigan report, and they played defense in this entire set on the record straight. That document, and link, by the way, we're going to have a document on America Out Loud with all kinds of links on it that Michael and I will have out with a show we did on this whole Dominion thing this past week here. You can catch that right now on the platform here at AmericaOutloud.com, the Dominion Fails Forensic Exam. But go look at all the evidence yourself, as you were just saying, Michael. Go look at the forensic report. Go look at all of these documents here, the Dominion vote and setting the record straight. See what they've got on there, and that's what we're all about. Another interesting story we want to talk to you about next that plays into some of this here is going to be the Biden, back to Hunter Biden. But whatever happened to that, remember Tucker Carlson had the big show that drove ratings crazy, and they had the hard drive and the flash drive, and they sent it through the mail, and it got lost and then recovered it. Whatever happened to that whole story? You're wondering that as well as we are? We are as well. And the whole Biden thing, what happens next to that? There's talk now about a special counsel being appointed. I think there's going to be a lot of shoes to drop, by the way, in the next few weeks. You better brace yourself, put your seatbelt on. We're all going to need it. Stay right there, friends. We'll have more Viewpoint Presents in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
My fellow Americans, our mission here at AmericaOutloud.com is clear. We're here to defend our founding values and principles at a moment when they are under unprecedented assault. And to cover the news objectively and offer intelligent commentary on the challenges we face as a nation. You can tune in and join our family of listeners 24/7 in this vital crusade. Our apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa. Find us on iHeartRadio or our world-class media player. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
Yeah,
there's a lot that we're struggling with in our country right now, my fellow Americans. And as we talked about in the earlier hour, and as we're talking about here with Michael in regards to this election and in regards to even COVID and a lot of the things that are happening, I take these conversations very seriously. We try to add a perspective here that you're not going to find anywhere else. And that's the goal of this show here. So as I bring Michael Johns back on with us here, this show initially, Viewpoint Presents, we started this with the idea, let's add a second great hour and make it just the best 2 hours of talk radio we could possibly do. And that is our goal here, is to bring you hopefully a perspective you're not going to find anywhere else, something different, and make you think outside of what you normally would. Let's face it, as Michael, I think you'll agree with me, the media, as we just pointed out in the first segment, they obviously have their own agenda they're playing to. And it seems to be, for sure, we all know that it's a consensus to get Trump out of office. All roads lead there. They've led there from the beginning. And as I said, I think on a show the other day, they'd have put Pinocchio in there for president. It really didn't matter. Case in point, why they have a Joe Biden in. I mean, you agree with that, don't you?
Yeah, I think it was that point in the primary season where it looked like it was over for him. And then he came back. And one thing that no one's questioning, so all of these election fraud issues that we're talking about, if I were a primary candidate in that Democratic primary and I was on the losing end of things, you know, maybe you want to go back and look at this too. Were you potentially victimized by some of these things? Because the allegations that are being made in these cases are that there was obvious bias in an agenda. Why wouldn't that agenda have also existed in the primary if it exists in the general?
Yeah, I think it definitely did. Let's talk before we get into the flash drive, the hard drive, and the Tucker component of this story about Biden that we're talking about here. Let me ask you this here. Your honest thoughts about, there's a lot of talk about, well, again, it's not going to help for today or tomorrow, but the president appointing a special counsel or the new acting AG or something on the Hunter Biden, Joe Biden story, so they can't kill it. In other words, if they end up keeping power after the 20th, and that's still very disputable. Let's put that out there. I'm not at all given into this election at this point, Michael. What do you say to that? The whole council thing. What does that do? I mean, what sort of protective measures can we put into place right now? And I almost think, you know, I have to be honest with you, Michael. When that's put out there, when I just put that quandary out there too, and others do, I almost hesitate to do it because I almost feel like we're giving up when people talk in this context. It's almost like we're getting. And I hate to do it almost because I'm not giving up, buddy, ever. So go ahead, talk to me.
Yeah, you're right. And there's even frustration with some conservative media outlets that are discussing a Biden administration as some sort of inevitable recognition. And then, you know, clearly you've got a lot of us are saying, well, we don't know how this is going to play out. I mean, I'm looking at affidavits that reverse this thing. If we've got anybody in this country who's interested in resolving these issues. But look, a special counsel is warranted on on Joe Biden's family, all of the payments that have been made to him. And one of the reasons, the many reasons that it's warranted, is his own response to this. Again, as I mentioned with Dominion, you're sort of faced with two answers. He could have held a big press conference and said, look, I know there's questions about these payments that have been made from China, from Ukraine, from countries from Russia. Let me explain what they all are, why we received them, how they were used, the work we did. And then, you know, you kind of, like, in fairness, you say, okay, well, feel a little better about it. May not agree that you should have done it, but at least you've answered the questions. He didn't do that. In fact, even as recently as this past week, in the few times he's even been asked about it by media, he's completely discounting it. My son's an honorable man. I'm proud of my son. Well, no one asked if you're proud of him. We're asking, what's the hundreds of millions of dollars from the Chinese Communist Party affiliated businesses going into his investment fund? What's the $3.5 million from the wife of the mayor of Moscow, who happens to be one of Putin's closest allies? How does this guy with no experience in energy, no experience in Ukraine, end up on the board of directors of one of Ukraine's largest energy companies? And what else don't we know about? Oh, and Iraq is another issue, which you may not even, I don't know if you're up to on that. That's another component where the brother apparently was put on this housing board in Iraq for a $1.5 billion housing project. No housing experience. It's kind of like a series of events. Like Biden was given a foreign policy responsibility. He would go, he would fail at the primary agenda for the United States. And then the family would end up with all of these lucrative deals that made no sense if you except for the fact that you were trying to buy power with and buy access to power and influence power through those arrangements.
And you think about everything you say there, and I'm thinking on the other hand, if that was the Trump family, I mean, just think about this a moment, people. If this was Donald Trump, we were talking about who's doing this. And think about this. Here's how unfair this all is, how stupid it is. You know, in 2015, 2016, I'm hearing the other side say right now, you got to accept this Biden presidency. You can't hold this over a head or create a special counsel to have you. But yeah, back in 2015, 2016, they pinned on the American people and on Donald Trump something that was non-existent. This whole Russia collusion theory, extraordinary, was nothing but a bunch of garbage. And they did that back then, and that was perfectly legit. Now they're asking for the other shoe on the other side, Michael. Now it's like, okay, you know, we don't want you to, you know, just let this go away and be done with it. Yet they don't explain anything, as you say. And then on the other hand, this is a legitimate problem. It's illegal. They broke the law. This is criminal activity on every level. And what if this was Eric Trump, Donald Trump, Ivanka, Jared, his family doing all of these shenanigans all around the world? Then some. What would happen then, Michael?
They explored every one of those. They explored every one of their business connections and avenues. And, you know, ultimately, you know, they found a few things that were not known to the American people, but there was no evidence of illegalities or certainly no evidence of purchasing influence.
But what if it was this kind of a story? What if it was this? I mean, what if they were guilty of all of these things on these boards, taking money?
We'd be through the impeachment process. We'd be two-thirds of the way through the impeachment process by now, because it was a recurring theme. and I started to remember, you know, it predates his actual inauguration.
Exactly. They had that in the paper. We had it in the newspaper. What was it, the Post, I think?
I almost fall over. I go, impeach. He hasn't even been sworn into office yet. And I think it was over his refusal to release taxes.
For which
he had no legal obligation. You know, and now it's Hunter Biden, who is $400 million on which – I want to be clear about this. This investigation is not about taxes, in my judgment. It's just my opinion. It starts with that. That's the border of it. But this Department of Justice is already involved in an investigation into Hunter Biden based. Yeah. If that laptop had been discovered, if he hadn't, you know, apparently forgotten to pick it up, I don't know how much we would know about any of these things, but I did say, and I want to reiterate that Attorney General Barr knew that had this investigation ongoing before the election and knew of the nature of these conflicts and why he was investigating it. Mm-hmm. Again, completely contradicting the great service I think he had in the Bush 41 administration. It seems to me he politicized this and not releasing to American voters the fact that the magnitude of these allegations of pay to play and possible compromising of a presidential candidate were out there. It's described the complete opposite way, that he didn't want to politicize it. But the American voters had some reasonable expectation to know that you have a family that's been enriched into hundreds of million dollars for which they appear to have done almost no work. I mean, can you name anything they actually have done here? And they clearly were not credentialed to do.
There's no credentials on any of it, which you've shown.
Would you put money into Hunter Biden's private equity fund?
Nobody would. But money laundering is up there. The criminal activities here are pretty well documented here. Let's talk about that flash drive and hard drive. Do you remember when Tucker Carlson went to the airwaves, and it was a big deal? He had, I think it was like ground record-breaking ratings with that Bobulinski interview. Remember that? That was huge.
Yep.
That was one for the record book, actually. I mean, sometimes in your career, you get noted, duly noted to do something tremendous. It becomes a moment. That was probably one for Tucker right there. But and then you remember the drive was sent through the mail or something. It's a very odd story. And I remember it was all like, you know, where's the computer drive, the flash drive, and what's happened to the, you know, the whole deal, the hard drive. And we didn't hear any more on it. Whatever happened to all that? I didn't ever heard any more.
Well, I want to come back to this general theme, which I think permeates this our show today, is that if you have nothing to fear, why, what are you hiding and why aren't you answering questions? So the laptop gets revealed to Giuliani's attorney. Giuliani's attorney provides it to the New York Post. The New York Post wrote a series of articles about this that would have been immensely instructive, helpful, and educational to the American voters. And of course, social media completely blocks access to it, doesn't allow anyone to reference it, which is really almost unprecedented, isn't it? I mean, can you recall any time in our history, at least in our lives, where you've had a media outlet, who are they to make this decision?
Never seen it before.
You know, I mean, seriously, who are they to decide that the fourth largest newspaper in the country, that I think like is probably the longest standing published newspaper in our country, that is a long and distinguished history, that their reporting is somehow needs to be blocked from the American people?
Well, they're doing
all
it everywhere.
This stuff, while they're allowing the Iranian mullahs to, you know, have their accounts and all of their propaganda. This was, and I don't see anyone who's questioning the validity of this reporting. But here's my broader question. So firstly, in the ideal world, we would have had some announcement by DOJ. We don't get that because there's a feeling I believe that you agree with, that this DOJ for 4 years now has been covering for the other side, and they brought politics to what should be matters of justice. So the bar should have been out there saying, you know, innocent until proven guilty, no charges filed. But we have launched an investigation, and here's what it involves. And then Biden, in turn, if he were serious about addressing it, wouldn't blow off the question or two that were asked to him, and as you and I pointed out previously, wasn't even asked about it in the debates, and would have provided a full explanation. Instead, he continues to reply defensively. I think it's unreasonable to think that his AG can be expected to continue this investigation, and Trump should appoint a special prosecutor. But then it sort of gets to what you said about Tucker Carlson, okay? A longstanding colleague of mine who I hold in high esteem, who's provided, I think, great service in his commentary, analysis, and news reporting. But this was curious, I thought, because he announced, if you go back to like the end of October, he starts reporting on the fact that he has reviewed the contents of this, that they're, you know, he had all these adjectives to describe that they were damning, they were, you know, unbelievably devastating, criminal in nature, raised all kinds of serious questions. And of course, the country's like tuning in saying, oh, wow, I better understand what's going on here. And
right.
It was sort of night after night before the Bobulinski interview. And then we never, you know, so then he goes to shit that where Fox does, not him, but Fox goes to ship it. So they got an office there, Avenue of Americas. They go to ship it out to Los Angeles, where I guess he was to meet with Bobulinski, and it mysteriously disappears. Right. How often does that happen? Like 1 out of 1,000 times, 10,000 times?
Never seen it before.
Yeah. But then, okay. So they're like, hey, we lost this. It's really important information. We need it back. We need this flash drive. Then apparently they UPS investigates it, and they sort of like mysteriously, it's like on somebody's desk. A whole broad range of questions. To me, like if you're involved in journalism recovery, like that to me is an intriguing story. What happened here? Right. Mm-hmm. You mail a routine UPS package.
I don't understand it. No, what happened?
Engages, finds it, opens it, mm-hmm. then it's gone, then it reappears. Nobody really offers. You never get any explanation from that. But most importantly, all of this damning information that he had described leading up to the election, which led a lot of people to believe this was going to be the big October surprise that you're used to seeing in elections, where you have a big drop of really to this date. There's been no explanation from him what it is he actually reviewed. And I do know that he happens to be personal friends with Hunter Biden. I think he's a professional. I don't think he would allow that relationship to interfere with his job or his reporting. And there may be many issues at play here.
I mean, what's so wrong with this picture? And I mean, the guy is a drug addict. He's sleeping with everything. He's got all kinds of problems, and he's flying on Air Force Two, making all these deals with world leaders. What could possibly go wrong, Michael? Right.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so this is, you know, this is, there are huge questions here. Amazing. And there are questions as it relates to this president-elect's ability to make independent and decisions in the American interest that are far, as you correctly point out, far and above nothing. There was no internet. Turned out there was almost no interaction between U.S. between Trump and Putin and Trump and Russia. In fact, it was almost. I almost looked at it and said it was kind of an underdeveloped relationship for a president.
Well, it was definitely underdeveloped, and it was underdeveloped because they didn't want him to have a relationship with Russia. They used it as they pigeonholed the whole thing, and we never had a shot with Putin. Never had a shot with Russia.
But this is one of these issues where every once in a while I stumble across something, and I even mentioned this to you last night. I said, what am I missing here, Malcolm? I mean, he saw the flash drive. He described it on air, which is a big deal for a big national network like that, in really graphic, damning terms. And then to go like almost 2 months now with no report. What do you make of that?
Well, like you said, he had the goods. They had them. We didn't hear anything more out of it.
Why is he not being questioned about what was in it?
Well, I mean, that's
doesn't
exactly
he have a
it.
Journalist. Let's just take journalistic responsibility.
Hard to say.
Doesn't he have some responsibility to sort of say, here's what was in it?
You would think, but again, it was almost, you know, when that laptop went missing, I started thinking about, you remember the Today Show when Matt Lauer used to be, before we knew what kind of a pervert he was, do you remember the times when it was Where in the World Was Matt Lauer? They used to do that series. You know, I thought of that with the laptop. Where in the world did that laptop go, man? That's why, I don't know why my mom... I've been thinking about that time.
Well, you know, and these are the things where you start to lose confidence because I'll tell you something, the American people are very skeptical of big institutions. They're skeptical of media. They're skeptical of big companies. They're skeptical of big government.
Big time.
You know, and now you have like one of these cases where you got information that's undeniably important to the American voters. You got an ongoing federal investigation that's been concealed from them by a Department of Justice that probably doesn't want to damage to Biden's candidacy.
Yeah.
And you have a major media figure, maybe the biggest media figure. Well, there's no doubt. I mean, the highest rated television news show in the country who, you know, gets the country all sort of excited about what the content is, hypes it for a series of days before the election, and then just like nothing.
Well, my friend, these are interesting times.
And now he's out criticizing the media for not providing adequate coverage of it. But the logical question is that, you know, in fairness to the mainstream media, which I'm not used to defending, but it would be helpful if he would sort of release to them what he knows about it.
Yeah, these are interesting times. And the next few weeks, Michael, are going to be the most interesting probably of our political lives, maybe. You know that.
Yeah, you bet. Absolutely.
Potential for that is going to be huge. And by the way, let me wish you, Michael, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, where it's upon us, you know.
Merry Christmas to you, Malcolm. Happy holidays to all of our listeners. We are we probably don't say it enough how appreciative we are of all the positive feedback we get, of all the, you know, the growing audience that we have, and the ideas that we get that are offered to us. And you know, we're it's a big family, I think, as you and I both view it, and we certainly wish everyone peaceful and happy holidays, even though we're going through a stressful national period, for sure.
It is all of that, my friend. And, you know, I mentioned earlier up front, Michael, in the other program about the Star of Bethlehem, or call it whatever you want, the Star of Christmas, some are calling it, but the fact that Jupiter and Saturn are becoming one.
Yeah.
And a fascinating story. Yeah.
First time since when is that? Like
since the medieval times, since 1623, my friend. 1623 is the year that happened last. You were just a child back then. So
yes. About 45.
Something like that. If we could just preserve our age, man. Listen, my fellow Americans, want to thank you very much for being part of the mission always, and wishing you the joyest of holidays here. It is important we step back, and I always say to you, count our blessings no matter what is coming at us. It is vitally important. I do that myself, and I hope you'll do that yourself as well out there. And my fellow Americans, it's time to get involved. and GitLab.